coming up on Thunder Pop.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is the 36th episode of the Thunder Pop podcast, and we better get this thing done before the storm comes in. Is there a storm? It looks like the storm could be coming in any time.
Yeah, it does.
So we want to knock this thing out before the power gets shut off or something. Like, yeah. Johnny Lightfoot joining us once again.
Hello, hello.
Johnny Lightfoot from Boy Wonder Broadcast. And myself, Stephen Presley. Once again. So we're excited. In this episode of the podcast, Johnny, I ask you the question. Is CGI the future of acting?
I mean, if we get there, I don't know when that could be, but I will say it is definitely trending up from where we were when we first started using CG in movies. So
we're going to talk about that. We can go back to some further back in time where they've used CGI, like in Benjamin Button's, to make him look younger in different parts of the movie than he really was. And then Tron was the one that really, I think, for a lot of people, was the one that really started getting people talking about.
Yeah, where you had the full CG character throughout the whole movie of the young Jeff Bridges.
The young Jeff Bridges CGI'd. And they had used in that a mold they made of his face and head. Mm-hmm. And then they took out the wrinkles and they did kind of gave him a facelift.
Right.
And then they used that to create the animation effect that they did to end up recreating and making the very glowing...
Yes, very glowing.
Young, glowing face of Jeff Bridges.
He might go to the same places as our president.
Exactly. I think he was going to the same places to get his work done, to get that glowing complexion. So we're going to talk about all that fun stuff. And then this is the most exciting thing. Another, in very recent time, last year's top grossing, domestic gross, of 2016 film, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, and we have a special guest from Rogue One, A Star Wars Story.
Yep.
Ingvill Delia is going to be here with us. Ingvild was the young Princess Leia.
Yep.
Now, she actually, with some help from CGI, was made to look like...
Yeah, a young Carrie Fisher.
A young Carrie Fisher. They used Carrie Fisher's face, but Ingvild cast...
Okay, kid, you got the job.
She had to go through an audition process, and we're going to talk to you about that, about what that was like. But one of the big things, too, keys for her getting cast, was they needed someone that had a similar facial structure, similar body, similar, you know, features. And then they were able to, because they wanted to be able to make that as easy as possible.
Right.
And be able to put the, superimpose the Carrie Fisher face over, and then... have her in the costume and I guess in the wig as well. So Ingvild Delia is here. We're very excited. We're going to talk to her about her work on Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. And this is cool because she was also in Avengers Age of Ultron.
So, yeah. Yep.
So she's doing some pretty exciting things. That's coming up. All of that. Man, that's a mouthful. And then I'm going to do some spring cleaning. Johnny has some thoughts and advice for you at the end of the show. All of that and a bag of chips.
Now, instead of the chip going in the dip, the dip's going in the chip.
Thunder Pop. It's time for Thunder Pop. Don't make me say it again. Thunder Pop. Thunder Pop. Thunder Pop. I will not say it again.
Thunder Pop. Okay, I lied.
Yeah, hello, hello, everyone. It is the 36th episode of the Thunder Pop podcast. We have not been put out of business yet, just like the Biggie, Notorious. We told you that we won't stop.
Nope.
Thought I told you that we won't stop. So we're here with Johnny Lightfoot, Stephen Presley. We've got Ingvild Delia joining us here shortly. We're very excited from Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, and also Age of Ultron. The question that we're asking today is CGI the future of acting? Looking at kind of the history of it, first of all, and where it started, where did the ideas started to come along that we might use animated actors in a live-action film. So first of all, CGI. Where do they get that term CGI?
So CGI, as we originally knew it when it was first kind of taking over for stop motion and things of that nature, you couldn't really render much. So most CGI tried to do stuff with as little texturing or human-like movement at all, because that was what seemed to throw people off of it, to where they noticed that it is CGI. So early on, you saw it typically used as like mechanical items or organic items like trees, or if you were going to do a human, like you would do like in Terminator 2, he was the liquid Terminator. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you tried to do things where people were already in the back of their mind, they're like, okay, this isn't a human, so you could pull it off better. Mm-hmm. Or in the instance of the very first CG character, you know, a knight.
Yeah, and the young Sherlock in 1985, they used a computer-generated knight for a virtual character in the film. And of course, then since then, we've seen everything in the artificial extras in Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they've used that effect. That started like back in the 90s, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Using artificial or...
just background.
Background for background talent. And so that was one of the first, but then they've done it, you know, several times, many times since then. There was a movie that was filmed with Johnny Knoxville here in Austin, I believe, where they had a football stadium, and they only had about half the stadium full of actual people, mm-hmm. and then they just sort of multiplied them.
Yeah.
That's
pretty effects. Common practice, because mm-hmm. then you're paying a lot less background talent.
Yeah.
Especially now as CG gets more and more cost effective as opposed to what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, you know, only movies on the scale of a Titanic could afford to do that.
A lot less craft services there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sometimes craft services can be badass. I did a lot of extra work on movies, late 90s, early 2000s. And I've actually even had some real acting jobs where I was, you know, in a trailer. But I know, like, craft services sometimes were awesome. Like, they had these chefs come in and make these, like, amazing meals. And then sometimes it was crap services.
Right.
And it was literally, I mean, like Subway, but the bread was getting kind of soggy because they didn't let us have it right away.
It's funny. I've only had craft service maybe three times doing, like, commercial or things like that, background talent. And I remember the best one I ever had was actually when I went and filmed a commercial for Best Buy years ago for cell phones. And I was actually the lead in that commercial. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the green room and I go out and their craft service tape, it's majority of it is medications and just snacks, like little like peanuts and just little like grab and go items and like headache medicine. And I was like, gosh, what am I getting myself into?
Was there a lot of hangovers on the set?
That's what I was kind of wondering, because it was just me and then the director, and I was just on a green screen, and then there was all of the people doing the lights and the sound and everything. So it was me and then like 10 other people, and I was like, maybe that's why they're being so cheap, you know? And then we break, and then all of a sudden some chefs pull in with, you know, some like silver platters and all this stuff, and it ended up being like really extravagant, like ahi tuna and all this stuff.
Oh.
And I was like, okay, so it just went from like the crap service to like the craft service.
Basically, the clearance bin at CVS, it was started off that, mm-hmm. and then it actually became like really craft services.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Nice, nice. So, yeah, they started off kind of using it in more comfortable areas where they were testing the technology. Of course, George Lucas really kicked the doors open with the prequels, using CGI and animation for a live-action film. And many would say he, of course, took it too far.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit too much and over an abundance of it. So whatever your opinion is on that, or whether you just were in awe of the visual imagery
and
advancements
mm-hmm.
that had been made at that point, because he said he wasn't even going to do the sequels or the prequels until the technology got to where he was comfortable being able to go forward and doing those. So that, in a way, it's sort of like Catch-22. It would not have happened. Maybe the prequels would not have happened at that juncture had he not been ready to to do that.
And had those not happened, maybe we wouldn't have gotten Disney buying the franchise and now the sequels.
The springboard, yeah, because then the franchise might have been kind of stagnant for even a longer mm-hmm. period of time had there not been this sort of reboot in the 90s that brought the franchise to another generation of fans, and then that generation of fans having the familiarity with it. And otherwise, it would have just been sort of that one group.
Right, and I mean, you think about the way he kind of introduced that to us was when he did the special editions mm-hmm. in 97, so 20 years now, mm-hmm. and just introducing those little CG, you know, background monsters and things like that got people a little more comfortable. And at the time, I remember I was blown away. Mm-hmm. And then same with the prequels. When episode one first came out, I was like, wow, this looks fantastic. Look, mm-hmm. that's a character that's 100% CGI, and I thought it was great. And then now, you know, it doesn't hold up as well, but that's the way it's changing so fast.
Yeah, we become more particular about what we... It's kind of like being a food snob. Like, once you've had, like, a gourmet hamburger, you expect that sort of type of quality every time. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, okay, what's this burnt crap, you know? So it's kind of like that. You get spoiled mm-hmm. as a viewer of movies. We've seen, like, Jeff Bridges. We're talking about the young Jeff Bridges in Tron. There, it was to bring the young Jeff Bridges back to life. When you saw Tron, impressed, or were at that point, were you kind of like, did it bother you?
I mean, the very first time I saw it like day one in theaters, and I walked out and I was like, wow, I can't believe they did that. And then, you know, several months later, half a year later, I got the Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. And I watched it over and over again at home. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like every time I watched it, you know, I'd be like, man, his mouth's moving kind of funny, mm-hmm. or his eyes are blinking kind of weird. Like, the more you look at it, your brain starts thinking these things out mm-hmm. and starts picking it apart. Whereas when you're just in the moment for the first time, you suspend that belief.
First game's on me.
Can we play doubles on the same team?
We're always on the same team.
Good evening. Our lead story, Kevin Flynn, was reported missing. The visionary icon and NCOM CEO skyrocketed to the top of the tech industry. He was last seen at home with his son, Sam, leaving behind an empire and a now orphan little boy.
It's exciting for an actor to not know now that he can play, you know, his character at any age.
Yeah, and it's kind of almost like, you know, when they used to do flashback scenes and they would try to recreate another point in time. Like, they've done it with sitcoms where they would try to go back. I remember I went to a taping of Everybody Loves Raymond. I think it was the 100th episode in Hollywood that we went and saw the live taping of the show. Mm-hmm. And they were doing a flashback for that show where it was where Raymond met his wife for the first time. He was a furniture mover, and he was moving her futon into her apartment. And they basically just do stuff like they put on a wig.
Right.
They would wear, like, their hair different, like,
straighter. Little extra makeup or something.
Little extra makeup, and they would dress a little different, and maybe his body language is trying to be a little bit more like a bro, kind of like a young dude. Mm-hmm. So they were trying to do it with the acting and also the wigs.
Delivered one of these to Cher yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, she wasn't there. Her assistant was there. I'm not really a futon guy. I'm going to be a writer.
So that was kind of how they approached it back then, when they would do those sort of things where they would... And then there were some movies, we've seen them, where they would just have a younger person that looked like the actor
right.
play them in a flashback scene. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the norm for a while. So even there, sometimes you had to suspend belief because they looked like him, but did they really look like him that much enough?
Right.
Sometimes they didn't. Sometimes they did. Sometimes they would knock it out of the park. The perfect actor that looked exactly like a young Susan Sarandon, for an example.
Right.
Then you're going to have to go to the next best thing and get someone that's kind of close. But the effects, a lot of people criticize the work that was done in Tron, like we were talking about, mm-hmm. with Jeff Bridges, and having problems with it, saying it was kind of bothered him a little bit. Do we need to go the same route and just sort of suspend belief and just sort of allow it, like it's a flashback, or it's going to be sort of a help to help the plot along?
I mean, it's a tough crossroad because there are those instances where there's no other way, mm-hmm. and it just wouldn't have, you know, 20 years ago, it just wouldn't have been possible if you were to try to do Tron Legacy 20, 25 years ago,
yeah.
and you wanted to make a younger Jeff Bridges, you would just have to find a younger actor
to play him.
Yeah, and then on top of that, then you're also having Jeff Bridges do the voice, so you're going to have make it to where that actor's mouth looks like it's Jeff Bridges speaking, which then just looks like bad lip reading, and so it just ends up being a big thing, whereas CG, you can manipulate the mouth a little bit to where maybe it fits, as opposed to relying on a double.
Now, in that Tron movie, to get that effect, they molded Jeff Bridges' head and face. They made a mold of it. And they didn't actually leave the mold on him.
No,
They didn't just like mold his head and leave him there. Say, God, let me enter. But they did a mold of his head, and then they gave him a virtual facelift. They took out the wrinkles.
Right.
They took out the lines. And then that was there. Then they casted an actor. They still casted the actor to play the young Jeff Bridges, like they've done with Rogue One.
That looks similar, or similar structure.
Similar structure. And then they had that. And so probably a movie like Benjamin Buttons, another one that came out several years ago to make Brad Pitt look like the younger version of Brad Pitt. Then they took that, and then the Tron. Those are sort of a springboard to get where we're now with Rogue One.
Right. And even not as recently as Rogue One, you had the Fast and the Furious 7 with Paul Walker, where the majority of that film is like his brother or body double, and they just CG'd his face. Granted, they tried to refrain from doing much speaking on purpose, because, you know, it for them, it wasn't something that was planned out. It just happened due to the tragedy. So they just had to cut lines and then just put his face in there. So it's a little easier process, but
using the brother, Paul Walker. They used him for that. Do you think he was the best person? Because with Rogue One, I feel like they went out and found the best person to do. Like, Ingvild was the best actress for the job.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at some side-by-side of their face and their facial structures is very similar.
So Paul Walker's brother, it wasn't just because he was brother. Maybe he was the best guy for the job.
I haven't honestly seen a picture of what he looks like, but from reports I heard, he does look very similar to Paul Walker, except in stature. So in some scenes where maybe he was standing side by side with Vin Diesel, they would actually use a different body double that maybe looked less like him in the face, but in build looked more like Paul Walker.
Yeah, he's a little smaller than Paul, maybe, but looks a lot like him in the face. So now you fast forward Rogue One, they bring Carrie Fisher. It was a big surprise. Nobody knew that. They bring Carrie Fisher back with the help of Industrial Light and Magic and their brilliance, and the actress Ingvild Delia. But before Force Awakens came out, of course, there were rumors that were going around for months about what was going to be and what wasn't going to be with Force Awakens before the teaser trailer and after the teaser trailer. One of the rumors that was out for a while was that Carrie Fisher's daughter...
Right, I heard that too.
...was going to be used for a flashback scene to bring back the young Princess Leia in Force Awakens, which never ended up happening and would not have even seemed to fit anywhere in that movie. Her daughter, Billy Lord, very gorgeous lady and doing big things on her own, but not really having the same features and facial structures like her mom. Probably maybe a little bit, but not a lot. So there, you know, would have not maybe have been as feasible to use her, unless they were going to just sort of play it off as if we're just going to say we're going to use somebody that looks
kind of like her
and just make her hair the same hairstyle and put her in the same clothes. That would have been only the way they would have worked it out. Do you think we're better off right now as a moviegoers, fans of special effects, fans of visual effects? Are we better off right now to have it as is with CGI than not have it at all? Like, would you prefer that everything just kind of get held back until they get it even better? Because some people were like, well, it's still not perfect.
Grand Moff Tarkin?
Yeah, Grand Moff Tarkin, where they used him in a key role in Rogue One. It wasn't just that one scene. And some people, I remember you even mentioned, you're like, you know, it was sort of like, at times, bothered me a little bit. But are we better off to have the version we have than to not have it at all right now as a movie-going fan base?
I think so, because of the way that film was written, you couldn't take that character out of the movie and have the same film experience. And I will say, even though...
And it doesn't connect as well with A New Hope.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
It dealt a lot with plot. So if you took him out, it messes with the entire plot of the film. And then it also takes away from, like, oh, now some more stuff makes sense in A New Hope, knowing what you know about Tarkin from Rogue One.
Yeah.
And that's for people who don't read the books and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice little... tidbits for everybody. And even though that was probably my biggest disappointment with Rogue One was the CG Tarkin, now having owned the Blu-ray over the last week, I'll say I've watched it three more times and it doesn't bother me as much now. Mm-hmm. And it's probably because now I'm not shocked by it. And so then I started nitpicking it, and then in the theater the next time I started like purposefully looking for it. Whereas now I'm just watching it as a movie and I've gotten used to it. And so I'm just like, okay.
And you said when you saw it, also being seen it on a smaller screen, you don't notice.
Right. That Which as is much. Weird because I had the opposite effect with Tron, but with Rogue One. And I'm assuming it's because the technology has just gotten better that now it just doesn't throw me out of the movie as much.
You know, things like plot is kept secret. Mm-hmm. Until the movie comes out, like on big movies like Star Wars and the Star Trek films and stuff like that. There's these different special effect, visual effect houses, like companies in Hollywood, correct?
Right.
Industrial Light and Magic, that's doing all the Star Wars stuff, correct?
Right.
Most of all the Star Wars stuff. But there may have been a different company doing, like working on another movie, like an Avatar.
Right.
For example.
Because that's James Cameron's people.
Yeah. So how much... do they share? Because if Industrial Light and Magic is doing what they're doing with Rogue One, but then you had the work that was being done on Tron, I mean, if it's a different company that's working on Tron, are they trying to keep their what they do away from the other companies, or is there a lot of swapping of ideas?
I actually would like to know the answer to that. Because on one side, you would kind of hope that for industry standards to... keep going better and better and better, you would hope it kind of becomes industry standard. But then I would also understand that I know James Cameron is pretty particular about his things, to where he's also one of those guys who, like Lucas, doesn't want to put out the Avatar sequels before he feels like the technology is there to do it the way he wants to do it. And that's why it's been 8 years.
Going on a decade.
Yeah. And so... you know, and he was kind of the first one of the first ones with Avatar to do the whole face mapping technology. That way, even if the character on screen wasn't even a human, you were at least getting the facial movements more on par with a human
and stuff. So, and then of course, you know, I know that like companies like Industrial Light and Magic, they work for a lot of different people. You know, they probably have collaborated with Spielberg on projects.
Well, yeah.
George Lucas' relationship with them.
And then you also have like Weta, which did like the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit movies. And I know they've done a couple other films I'm probably forgetting. But, you know, they kind of revolutionized motion capture with Andy Serkis. And that continues to this day. You know, they did the King Kong... the Peter Jackson King Kong movie.
And we had that the director from Star Trek Axanar that worked on that. And he actually, when I was doing research on him, I learned that he did the mold for Kong.
Oh, wow.
So that was his job on the Kong movie.
Interesting stuff.
Peter Jackson Kong movie. We speculated, we didn't actually get to ask him this question, that it was Peter Jackson that actually got him started in directing, like that told him, because he mentioned but would not mention a name of someone while he was working on that film that told him that hey, you should try directing. It was Christian Gossett we're talking about, and then he said that sort of like kind of set him on his way into directing. And we've speculated that maybe it was Peter Jackson himself that actually may have been the one that gave him that tip, that advice.
I mean, if somebody's going to motivate you, somebody like Peter Jackson, it would definitely do it for me.
yeah, absolutely. So I want to do like a CGI, like where you could have your own force ghost, like brought into your house. Like, we're talking about merchandise.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Star Wars merchandise. I'd love to be able to have like where you could have your own Obi-Wan Kenobi that could be dial up any time for wisdom.
Right.
Or Yoda that you could dial up. If you could have one force ghost, would you go Yoda? Anakin? Would you go Obi-Wan? Qui-Gon? Who do you take? If that becomes a real thing.
I would probably do Obi-Wan, and I would want to do like an Alec Guinness.
The Alec Guinness, the one that Luke had.
Yeah. Obi-Wan, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you think because of two different actors playing Obi-Wan Kenobi from prequel to second trilogy that we may not get Obi-Wan Force Ghost in future movies because there's that weird confusion there of which one you use, and do you use a blend of the two? Or
it's funny because twice my roommate had brought it up to me. When you think of Obi-Wan, who do you think of? And I always respond Alec Guinness.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells me, because apparently he's asked multiple people, and he goes, you know, you're the only one who answers Alec Guinness.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else answers Ewan McGregor. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's because it's fresher or because mm-hmm. Ewan McGregor is still around, or that Ewan McGregor technically had a lot more screen time.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, apparently I'm in the minority, a lot of people think of Ewan McGregor when they think of Obi-Wan.
Which one of you fellers is the real
Obi-Wan?
Which one of you fellers is the real
Obi-Wan?
Which one of you fellers is the real
Obi-Wan?
They did use Alec Guinness' voice in Force Awakens.
Yeah, they used a blend of it.
They used a blend of his voice, so that makes me think they may have a deal where they could still use his likeness.
Mm-hmm.
So if they wanted to use the Alec Guinness Obi-Wan as a Force Ghost, I mean, the technology's there to do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They always mirrored on, like, the Clone Wars cartoon shows. Mm-hmm. The Obi-Wan was always based on the Ewan McGregor.
Right.
But this past season on Rebels, Obi-Wan came back, and it was Alec Guinness, Obi-Wan. And the voice was more Alec Guinness than Ewan McGregor.
And, of course, the bigger question would be how much you made Ewan McGregor up to look older. How close would he look to the Alec Guinness that we
wanted? I mean, I've seen some pretty good Photoshop jobs that people have done. So, I mean, if that's just people using Photoshop, I wouldn't be surprised if you could get him looking like Alec Guinness.
Probably voice, because they've already done that in that flashback.
Voice, most definitely.
The voice, they'll probably, and they may do a similar thing where they blend their voices together again and use little bits of both.
I mean, and I believe somebody said that Ewan McGregor did an old Obi-Wan voice, and it sounded eerily similar to Alec Guinness. But on the flip side, the person who voiced it in Rebels, you know, I was speaking to you about voice acting.
Yeah.
Whoever the voice actor was that did the old Obi-Wan in the Rebels cartoon, it was spot on. If you had played that and then played a clip from A New Hope, I would have thought it was Alec Guinness, hands down.
Wow.
See you soon, apprentice. Look what has become of you. A rat in the desert.
Look what I have risen above.
I have come to kill you, but perhaps it's worse to leave you here, festering in your squalor.
If you define yourself by your power to take life, your desire to dominate, to possess, then you have nothing.
Now we've talked about kind of a little past. What's where it started sort of as a, sometimes as accessory to the scene.
Right.
Then they started using, like, recreating background talent so they could cut back a little bit on craft service budget.
Mm-hmm.
So they started using background talent. Then they started getting a little more brazen. And we saw the Forrest Gump where they used visual effects to bring back dead presidents.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was Benjamin Buttons, which was some of the same people that worked on Forrest Gump. So they're sort of innovators in this whole thing. They made Brad Pitt look like the younger version of himself. Tron Legacy, making Jeff Bridges look a younger version of himself. The Star Wars prequels, George Lucas kicking the doors open and creating a kind of a blend of an animated / live action world and blending the two together. And even if you were not a fan of what he did in those movies, you have to admire the innovation.
Because not a single clone trooper in all of the prequels was a person in a costume.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was in awe of it because it was so unique and different. Just recently, listening to some Roger Ebert reviews, and he was always a big fan of George Lucas, but he was watching some of his reviews. Even where he critiqued, he always went back and said, I have to admire the advancements, the things that George Lucas has come up with and put in these films. So now, kind of moving ahead, looking at where they're at now, we've got Ingvild Delia in that surprise scene at the end of Rogue One, bringing back the young Carrie Fisher from that Princess Leia movie. We've got the upcoming Star Wars Episode 8 and Episode 9. Again, it all comes back to Princess Leia and Carrie Fisher. That's where there's been the most speculation, or there was the most speculation, of were they going to bring CGI back to be able to fill some holes where they may have needed Princess Leia because of her untimely death, the actress Carrie Fisher's untimely death. So there, now, of course, they had said from the get-go, no CGI Leia for these upcoming, you know, sequels. But she finished 8. It seems like I can see the importance of Leia because she has a connection to the key antagonist character, being the mother. And so there is that, and it is a big part of the Skywalker saga, the offspring that continues.
And Luke's twin.
I did some Googles after she passed away, and I was like, Stevie Nicks was the only person that was coming up that was a known entity that really likes, okay, she looks a little bit like Carrie Fisher. If you darken her hair, maybe, does she do any acting? Is she already out at the studio right now running lines with the director? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's that, or, you know, if you wanted to go to makeup effects. Because, you know, there are still studios and there are still filmmakers that prefer practical makeup effects over CGI when it comes to people. I know in, like, the Lord of the Rings movies, when they wanted to age certain characters, they would just use makeup effects and prosthetics to do that instead.
That would be interesting. Maybe they thought they could, I mean, they could do that. They could make that happen. So that's a, you know, that's another possibility.
Right, and it could be because the majority of 8 had been shot already when she passed. So maybe that's why, like, within a week of her passing, Disney came out and said no CG Leia was... Once she passed, they probably scrambled and said, what do we have in the can of Carrie Fisher? And then they looked at all the footage. They said, okay, we're good.
One thing you can guarantee with this podcast, we are not going to CGI any of the hosts.
No.
Johnny, Reed, Jazz, myself, we're not going to CGI any of ourselves in this year.
No.
Or next year.
Guaranteed.
But at the year after that, if the technology is getting there, we may try to do an episode.
Could be.
Where we all CGI in ourselves. Actually, it wouldn't be a bad idea for an episode. Okay, I take that back. If we can figure out a way to pull it off, we might try it. So, where are we at with this in 5 years, 10 years from now? We're further along with it, obviously. We're in a pretty interesting place. Are we at a spot where we'll be not that far off? Hollywood may actually replace the actor with effects, CGI?
I mean, it could happen because, think back, see, Tron was a little over 6 years ago that that happened, and the difference between that and then Tarkin this last year was miles ahead of its time, and then you go from the Jeff Bridges and Tron and you backtrack, you know, 10 more years, then you're looking at the prequels, where we were then to where we were with Tron, and then you go, you can keep going back and you just see the advancements over the years that it will get to a point where you cannot tell the difference.
Is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it sort of both?
It's a little bit of both, but in one aspect, it's nice because if you get the permissions of certain estates, you would be able to bring back some actors. Remember, it was a Gap commercial several years ago. They did it with Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah, and some commercials. It's happened.
And so, you know, it would be interesting if you could see, you know, maybe a classic movie star in the same setting as somebody who's a star today.
A team up. Jimmy Stewart and Tom Hanks. Star together.
You know, you get like James Dean and Chris Hemsworth.
Then they would start making sequels to movies that were from like decades ago. Where they use the actors. Like they may do another Gone with the Wind sequel. They did a TV movie, used a different actors years ago. But it wasn't the original cast, obviously, because it had been several decades later. Maybe, or if you really want a real Wizard of Oz sequel with the original cast. They didn't ever really get around to an E.T. sequel. But now they could maybe do that, because they could actually, if they waited like 10 more years or 20 or more years and wanted to do the E.T. sequel.
You could.
You could do it. You could do it with the actual actors. So there's been they've done commercials. There was this movie called The Congress, and you said some friends of yours screened this here in Austin. Mm-hmm. It was shot in 2013. It's with Robin Wright.
Playing herself, she's playing Robin Wright.
Robin Wright standing in the middle of a huge geodesic dome of LEDs and cameras, giving her very last performance as she sobs bitterly. Her every moment and micro expression is scanned. Later, an artificial version of the actress will be created to take her place in all of her future films. The real Robin Wright will be redundant. Princess Bride fans need not panic just yet, though. The scene is from Ari Folman's new film, The Congress. Trippy, dystopian vision of a future in which artifice has displaced reality, but it is a future that may be closer than we think. Virtual characters in films are nothing new. The first, a computer-generated knight, which we were talking about earlier from the young Sherlock in 85. And since then, we've seen everything from artificial extras in Titanic, which we talked about as well. Interesting. You were talking about, before we started, about how there's these amazing voice actors.
Right.
And how this would be really good for the voice actors using CGI.
Right.
For the physical actor.
Uh-huh. Because, you know, it's a lot of these voice actors can convey tons of emotion just with their voices. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they do great work. I mean, Kevin Conroy, I still to this day, when I look at a Batman page, that's the voice that's playing in my head. Mm-hmm. Just because to me, he's Batman more so than any actor. Mark Hamill is just as much the Joker as he is Luke Skywalker, mm-hmm. In my opinion. And so, you know, it would be nice if maybe, you know, certain actors who don't have the physical tools could just play the voice. Because a lot of times, these voice actors convey a lot more emotion than some of these wooden actors, mm-hmm. who just happen to be really pretty.
Yeah, they just don't have the physicality. I don't know if Mark Hamill could have played the Joker in a modern day actual live action acting, mm-hmm. out the Joker, but his voice to me is knock it out of the park.
Absolutely.
And maybe he could have done Joker in a portrayal of a live action. I'm not saying that completely for sure, but we know his voice really knocks it out of the park. All right, when we come back, I'm very excited. From Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, Ingvild Delia, and we practiced that.
Yeah.
Before the show, and hopefully we're getting that right. We'll have to ask. We'll just ask her and see if we're getting that.
Thunderpop, in association with D's Nuts Productions. Got 'em.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is our pleasure to bring you a huge star in the Star Wars world. She played the young Princess Leia in Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. Ladies and gentlemen, Ingvild Delia.
Hello.
Did I get that right?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I've heard worse.
Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to practice afterwards, and we're going to say it like 20 times the right way, and then we'll edit in the one that turned out the closest.
Super.
Well, we're really excited to have you here. I think it's afternoon where you're at. You're 5 o'clock in the afternoon?
Yeah, 4:15.
Yeah.
On a sunny spring day.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Not so sunny today.
We're pretty overcast, and we're Texas, so we're supposed to be the place with sunshine. Ironically, you're in London?
Yeah.
So ironically, Texas is a place known for sunshine. London is the place known for being cloudy, but we've kind of traded places today. Yeah. So I think somehow we're going to be eating fish and chips today, and she's going to be the one eating breakfast tacos and barbecue.
Barbecue, yeah.
And so it's going to be kind of an alternate universe.
All Tex-Mex style.
Yeah, have you ever had Tex-Mex?
I didn't think I've had the real Tex-Mex, no.
Yeah. Did you have some version maybe that you could get in England? Or I know you were in California, so you've been out
there. Yeah. No, I think I've had, because I've had Mexican food, and I've had sort of American food, but then Tex-Mex is quite specific, isn't it? So
yeah.
I don't think I've had the pleasure. I guess I need just to come to Texas to try it, I guess.
Well, you already know a lot more about Texas cuisine just from talking to you for a few seconds than I would know about food in Norway. So we're already, and you're actually originally from Norway. You're Norwegian.
Yeah.
You moved to England for school.
Yes. Yeah, I moved here to finish up my studies and and continue my studies.
Yeah. So you were studying in Norway, and then you went to England for an MA in media for development, and I had to read this just because I wouldn't have been able to remember it all. MA in media for development and social change. That's what
yes.
You went. So you were there.
A very pretentious title.
Well, it sounds pretty important. Yeah. So what were your aspirations when you went to continue, and you went to England to study, and that
plans? Yeah, well, so I did philosophy for my BA, my bachelor's, and then I wanted to pair it up with something that's a bit more tangible that I could get work from. So I thought, media and global studies could work, and then I could go into NGO and sort of charities and do the film bit for charities. So that's what I did, Save the Children, or did an internship and then a bit of freelance. But then I got roped into a film, and this became an actor with time, over time, which I did not see. I didn't see that one coming. So I'm still a bit surprised to call myself an actor, but yeah.
And just think, Ingvild, you know, how the roads can, sometimes you can take the right or take the left when you're at the kind of the crossroads. It could have just easily been someone that had said, hey, our keyboardist is sick and we need a keyboardist for our band. Could you come and just hit some keys for us tonight? And you could have, next thing you know, you would have been pursuing a musical career. We might have been interviewing you on a music podcast at that point. So, but movies instead, you were, like you said, it's always roped in at first. Like if you got other things you're working on, you're in school, and they ask you, hey, come and do this film. But so the acting bug hit you pretty quick.
Yeah, it did. So I did a bit of like theater when I was a teenager, and I never considered it to be like a career or profession. But yeah, getting a chance to act again later on, I realized how much I enjoyed it. So yeah, I sort of slowly did more and more acting and less and less work for Save the Children. And then, yeah, I decided to just follow that road and see where it would take me, which I'm still on that road, just taking it as it comes.
It's an ongoing journey. It's a journey that continues and never stops. I mean, I'm still, like, even someone like Susan Sarandon that's been doing it for decades, it's still, I mean, there's things she's still learning, and it's still a journey.
Where were you, like, what were you doing, how did you feel when you found out that this role was in a Star Wars movie, that you were playing Princess Leia? It's kind of that moment. I had heard you didn't know what you were auditioning for or
anything.
Like, where were you, what were you doing, like, how did you feel?
And this is gonna be really boring answer. I was probably putting up my laundry or doing the dishes.
Make something up. I'm gonna swoop in here and be your faux business manager. We're gonna come up with you were hiking the Appalachia Mountains and your phone rings and you didn't know whether to answer because it was kind of unsafe at the time. You didn't know whether you could reach for your you got it. You got it.
Another normal day. Yeah. You know, it was just a very, very everyday moment. And then she called me, and I think she just said, "It is on." And then I realized, like, yeah, okay. She didn't need to say anything else. She could have just hung up, and I would have started my silly chicken right there. But yeah, it was great.
It's kind of like a chicken dance, right? I like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's a dance of victory. It's a celebration dance, for sure.
Yes.
Now we are so happy, we do the dance of joy!
Hey! Die, 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 die. It had to be really exciting. And then after that, I mean, getting big news like that, the rest of your day, you're kind of on an adrenaline rush, right?
Yeah, it's a very nice feeling.
During that the period of time, so now moving ahead, during the period of time that you were cast, and then the day you got the call to go, and then you go, and there's the periods of months, you film, I know you made the trip to California, and then you had another trip to another place, right, for the actual fitting of costumes and kind of getting out all that figured out. And then from that time to the time that Rogue One comes out, and you could actually talk about it, because it was a big secret. I mean, that was like the biggest secret in movie TV history since, like, Who Shot JR? And I know that's kind of, I'm kind of aging myself a little bit with the Who Shot JR reference, but I mean, I know he was really big in England. Dallas was really big in England, so maybe you've heard about him talking about.
I remember watching Dallas when I was younger, actually, just briefly. It was on Norwegian television as well.
Yeah, it was a big show globally. Yeah, it was. But anyway, like Star Wars, it was really big globally. So you have all that time. Like, how many months are we talking about that you had to, like, you couldn't
talk about? It was a year and a half.
Wow. Did you have to just kind of forget about it? Because that seemed like that would just be really hard to keep locked in.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't too bad keeping it a secret because I had a bit of practice from Avengers, Age of Ultron. Then I also had to keep that a secret. Not for as long, but yeah, that was sort of a good warm-up. But, I mean, it wasn't too bad keeping it a secret, except for when I went to castings and wanted to tell the casting director what I had lined up to sort of up my chances and make me stand out. And mm-hmm. so that was really frustrating. Mm-hmm. But I can tell them now, so it's all good.
You can talk about it. It's out to them. Did you have to keep quiet about Age of Ultron also?
Yeah, I had to. They do like to keep it all under wraps as long as they can, just not to get any spoilers out before the film comes out. So,
certainly,
yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, how the world's changed from the days in the 70s when George Lucas was making the original Star Wars, and now, like with the internet and the TMZs and all of that, things can easily just one little like blurb somewhere and it's everywhere.
Yeah.
So you're in Belfast. You were shooting a music video on the day your agent called you. They just said, we have a really big film audition for you. Okay.
Yeah.
We couldn't tell you at that point it was Star Wars. But you were like, you know, I have a wedding on that day. The day they said it has to be on this day. Like the audition, it's a big film, but it's on this day. And you had a wedding to go to, so you had to miss the wedding. I'm curious. It was a friend of yours. Did you still have to buy him a wedding present since you didn't go to the wedding? It's more of an etiquette question for myself. So if I ever have to take off and can't make to a wedding, do I still get the gift?
I think I had already decided on, like, I think I've already sent them the money or something. So it was already taken care of.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that was fine. I just had to miss the wedding. But they were very understanding when they found out.
I'm sure they were very, very understanding, especially once they ultimately found out what had had transpired. You were I was Princess Leia. I got to be Princess Leia.
That's a valid excuse.
Yeah, it's a pretty valid excuse.
While working on the project, how much did you actually get to work with Gareth Edwards? Tell us a little bit about your time with him. Like, what was he like? Did you work with him much?
Yeah, very sweet human being. He's very grounded. No prima donna factors going on there. He's very sort of just a regular guy who cares greatly for film and VFX. And yeah, he knows his stuff so well. And he was just amazingly generous and kind and supportive on set. So yeah, I felt very lucky to be working with him.
Okay, now that you've worked with Gareth, you worked with Gareth Edwards, you worked with two of Hollywood's biggest directors already in a young career. You worked with Gareth Edwards and Joss Whedon, of course, as we all know. And many might not have even known about your work on Age of Ultron. So go back and look at Age of Ultron. You're in that scene. It's in Stark Enterprises, I guess, would be with Robert Downey Jr. And you were, I guess, a lab tech was your role?
Kind of a technician. Yeah, helping out on the World Tech Hub thingy.
Yeah, the Hub Tech thingy. I think that's what they call it, too. When you look it up, specifically, it's called Stark's Hub Tech thingy. I saw in another interview, you think you were cast mainly because they were wanting a Norwegian lady for that role. Is that correct?
Yeah. Because I just started acting when I got the role. I was just probably 5 or 6 months in my acting career, or sort of having made that decision to give it a shot. So I was completely baffled that I sort of stumbled into this project. And also they were being very secretive, so I didn't know that I was auditioning for that film.
Same thing, yeah.
Yeah, which was probably good, because otherwise I would have been too nervous.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, definitely. It's almost better not knowing. When I was pounding the pavement acting, I think I did an America's Most Wanted about 5 or 6 months in, which is like a Crime Stoppers kind of show reenactment. And
yeah.
I didn't have to keep it a secret or anything, but I had a good, about 6 months where I had to, my house seized by the cops because someone called me in thinking I was the actual person that was wanted rather than the actual person. So it's a much better situation to have to just be secretive about what you worked on for a while than
especially on a crime show and you're playing the bag.
Yeah, you gotta be careful. So on that project, working with Gareth Edwards, working with Joss Whedon, kind of getting back to the question, how would you compare and contrast the two styles, like that of working with the two directors?
Well, they're both really friendly and have a very sort of nice vibe around them on set, not sort of the dictator style of directing, or sort of friendly, warm, funny way of just being relaxed and easygoing, but also that they have a very clear vision of what they want. So yeah, I mean, I didn't work for them with them extensively. It was just two brief scenes, but yeah, what I saw was really good.
Did you have any directors you work with so far? You don't have to name any names that were the more dictator-like.
Yeah, I've had all sorts of experiences, but most of them has been good. I mean, 98% of the people you meet are hardworking and good people. But there's always going to be the oddball that has, maybe out of inexperience, haven't really found a good sort of work style, or they're just not cut out for it. It's a very sort of, specific skill set I think you need to be a good director.
You had that scene in Age of Ultron. We talked about that with Robert Downey Jr. You got any inside baseball working with Robert?
Yeah, I mean, he was a really nice guy, and I, because this was my first sort of big, being on a big studio set, I was quite nervous. I remember I almost threw up in the car on my way there. But then once I got on set, I felt fine because everyone was so warm and friendly. Mm-hmm. And then I remember Robert Downey Jr., he's got a stand-in, that like a double, and they're quite similar. And I'd never, of course, met Robert Downey Jr. in person. So like for like fraction of a second, I was like, am I talking to Robert Downey Jr.? Or like... But then it dawned on me, no, it's just his double. But that was sort of like a nice sort of... introduction into meeting the actual Robert. So I think all my nerves disappeared, and then I was really chilled when Robert Downey Jr. came on set, and he's just amazing, like so friendly and funny, and made me feel at ease. Yeah.
He was here when the first Iron Man came out. He came over here.
Second one. Yeah, I was at that premiere.
You went to
him
that.
And him mm-hmm. and Jon Favreau.
Mm-hmm.
Afterwards, him and Jon Favreau go to the highball. Were you there?
Yeah, and Jon Favreau DJ'd, bought everybody drinks.
Yes, it was
and then
great.
Robert did karaoke,
mm-hmm.
and he put it in this sense. He was wearing a all plaid suit,
yeah.
sunglasses, and then stormtrooper high top tennis shoes.
Amazing
on fleek.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like it. They both seem like really great guys. Did you see Favreau in The Chef?
Yes. Yeah, I like that film.
I have a friend who quit his job. This is what movies can do. This is what you have the honor of being able to inspire people through what you do as an actress. But I have a friend who was working for a restaurant, kind of a chain, a small restaurant chain, but kind of was getting into a rut. He saw The Chef. It inspired him so much he quit his job. He's opening a restaurant now. He's following his dreams of becoming like a restaurant owner. And he said, when I saw the movie, I knew that was me. Like, that was me. And he's crying. Hmm. He said, I'm tearing up. And he's not like a real touchy-feely guy. So it's quite amazing what you get to do as an actress and being able to tell these stories and how they can inspire people, change people.
Yeah. I mean, that's the dream, isn't it? To mm-hmm. not just entertain, but also make people think and sort of get a greater understanding of what it's like to be a human and the choices that you have, and yeah, that you can change your life if you want to. That's great. Mm-hmm. Especially coming from like a charity background, I felt quite bad about leaving it for sort of what could be a sort of more superficious pursuit. But it all depends what you make of it, I feel. Like film is a tool like anything else. You can use it for good or bad.
Were there any scenes that you filmed or they were even discussing filming with you as a young Princess Leia that either didn't make it in the film or never got shot but kind of were talked about it a little bit?
I'm not sure if I'm at liberty to discuss that.
Sure. We understand. We knew that was one that was going to be possible.
Yeah,
kind of tipping the scales.
Right, yeah, I don't know what the brief is on that one, so I'll just have to.
Mm-hmm. Totally understand. Now, Carrie Fisher, the late great Carrie Fisher, she once made a hilarious reference.
Yeah,
she was roasting George Lucas at a George Lucas tribute. She made these hilarious jokes about having different Princess Leia's toys and merchandise around the house. Do you have any Princess Leia merch at the moment around the house?
No, I don't. It's not like a conscious choice or anything. It's just I don't have any merch. Well, I do own a Star Wars t-shirt, but that's it.
We have a few at the around. I got my.
I should expand my collection. Well, if it's one piece, it's not a collection. But I should get some more. I'm sure I will by the end of the year.
I had a gentleman. He's from New Zealand, and he recorded our theme song for our podcast. Really nice guy, and I wrote, collaborated, and we did a song. There was a Star Wars parody song that we did, and he pronounces. And so he lives in England now, like yourself, from New Zealand, lives in the UK. He pronounces in the Star Wars song he recorded for me. He pronounces Princess Leia Princess Leia, and I remember that was something the guys here joked about.
Yep.
Star Wars is so galactic, and Solo charismatic, makes me kinda asthmatic. If Anakin had studied his mathematic, maybe he wouldn't have spasmatic. The Force, of course, is wide awake, baby, and Princess Leia is the universe's hottest girl.
Is that a more of a natural pronunciation for Princess Leia accent for English or even New Zealand accent?
I don't know. I mean, I say Princess Leia, but that's how I roll. I don't know what other people do. I don't know. What is there like a debate around how to pronounce her name correctly?
I don't know if it was a huge debate, but
I don't think so.
But with the Texas guys, it became a huge... Because we want to pronounce it...
Princess Leia.
Princess Leia. That would be
Princess.
Can you do a Texas accent? I'm curious. You may get cast. Somebody might want to audition you to play...
Well, I don't know. Do I sound like a Texan?
Let's go have some barbecue.
Let's go have some barbecue. Well,
she actually sounds more Texan than a coworker that just moved from Boston.
So you're already closer than somebody that's... here on this side of the pond,
yeah,
to a Texas accent.
Oh, wow.
So
you have to teach me how it's done then. With a bit of practice, maybe.
I think you get there with some practice. I think you're already making some strides. Did you watch Carrie Fisher footage from the original Star Wars to be able to mimic her walk and movement?
Yeah, it's like the biggest chunk of my preparation, because they sent me two scenes from A New Hope, mm-hmm. when you meet Vader for the first time, and also a hologram monologue. So I just watched those two scenes again and again and again for a whole weekend, and also all of the original Star Wars films, and did nothing but just observe her. And also I went through all the interviews she did in the 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. just to sort of get a feel of how she comes across, and mm-hmm. even just down to how she moved her head and where her eyes were. And
wow.
So it was a huge challenge, but also a really interesting one, because usually when you prepare for a role, it's all about your interpretation of the role. Mm-hmm. But here I sort of had to let go of me and just sort of try and emulate her as much as I could. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was fun and difficult at the same time.
Awesome. Yeah, and you even said that you're ready if they want you for it. They want to do a Princess Leia standalone. You're ready to be dialed up for it.
I mean, yeah, it would be very, very scary, but also... something that you couldn't really turn down if they asked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Have you already been getting invites to the Comic Cons and this kind of the nerd type conventions?
Yeah. There's quite a few Comic Cons lined up this year. I don't think I can sort of... They need to announce me first, so I don't think I can tell which ones I'm going to yet, but I will make appearances this year.
Very awesome.
Great.
Around the world.
So look for that at someplace near you very soon.
So do you have any guilty pleasures you might want to tell any listeners, whether it be some sort of food item that may not necessarily be the best, or certain type of movie? Don't you know, you like 90s rom-coms or something like that? I don't know, anything really.
For me, it's boy bands.
Mm-hmm.
That's a guilty pleasure that I would not normally admit. So I'm opening up myself a little bit here that I do like some 90s.
Like Backstreet Boys?
Backstreet Boys, NSYNC. I love the Backstreet Boys and I love NSYNC. So I'm going to go ahead and get that out there.
I don't know. I guess we're all sort of strange in our own ways. I don't know if I like any strange films. I mean, I have been watching a lot of Jim Jarmusch, you know, the director?
Yes.
He just did a film with Adam Driver called Patterson, which I haven't watched, but I'm going to watch it. But I've been watching some of his old stuff with... like Tom Waits, like Down by Law and Mystery Train and those kinds of films. And I really like them. But I don't know if that's a guilty pleasure. and I don't know, food-wise, I do like... This is maybe a bit odd. I've been having like this strange breakfast thing that I've been doing now, because I discovered that having just frozen blueberries on peanut butter, like if you have a toast and then you put peanut butter on and then frozen blueberries, they sort of melt. And it's really nice.
I mean, try that, yes.
I like to put peanut butter on random things. Like, I'll eat bacon and put peanut butter on bacon, which I know most people would think. And then added to that, syrup that you normally would put on pancakes.
Whoa.
I would say ranch dressing. You put ranch dressing on, like, everything.
That sounds like you're, like, on the way to doing, like, an Elvis. He had, like, a crazy crazy sandwich going on with a lot of peanut butter and banana and whatnot.
I think you might be right. I think it might be my last name, Presley. It may be sort of starting to creep into my food choices, too. Did you go to the premiere for Rogue One, or did you go to any of the premieres?
Yeah. So I went to the London one. Mm-hmm. I wish I was in the LA one, because they had an X-Wing. I mean,
oh man, you had to take a picture with the X-Wing if you had been there.
Yeah. But we had stormtroopers as well, so that was nice. Okay, and it was a really lovely party. I really enjoyed it. It was great.
Everybody there? Felicity Jones, Garrett?
I think pretty much everyone was there.
You're there, but you were, you know, kind of just now people were starting to find out about the Princess Leia surprise. I don't even know if maybe it was possible some people that were even in the movie, like some of the lead actors, maybe they even kept that a secret from them. I don't know.
I at least some of them knew, because I spoke to Mats Mikkelsen, and we can speak our secret language, because he speaks Danish, or he's Danish and I'm Norwegian, so we understand each other. Mm-hmm. But he said to me, like, oh yeah, you're Princess Leia. So he knew, but I don't know if anyone else knew.
Wow. So you were... were there people coming up and like they didn't know who you were, right? Because you had not done interviews yet, because they had not you couldn't really do that beforehand.
Yeah, I remember some of the people like thought I was joking because someone introduced me to, oh yeah, and by the way, this is Princess Leia. I was like, yeah, right. Yeah. And they were like, no, she is.
You would have had to literally just walk around in your costume with the Princess Leia buns on. For like, say, look, here, look.
Yeah. See the similarity? Just imagine brunette.
That's why we wore these headphones, too, is to sort of representing the Princess Leia buns a little bit.
Yeah.
Today. Quick thing I want to do is game I came up with, and it could just totally just blow, or it could be a lot of fun. It's called Norwegian or Texan. You're from Norway, which, mm-hmm. by the way, is one of the most sparsely populated places in the world. Which I think is great.
Almost like Alaska.
Yeah, I think it's great. I would not know what that... We live in Austin, that's like one of the fastest growing places in the world. And and so we're constantly elbowing you.
We're trying to distance ourselves from all the people moving here.
Yeah, and traffic. You're sitting there and you kind of like you can't move. Go to the game, see if I can find some things that might be sort of could have been Norwegian or it could have been Texan. See, I think it's going to be a blast or it's going to be the worst thing ever. We'll see.
We'll find out.
Okay, this one I think is I'll start with one I think this is an easy one. Which place ranks first on the World Happiness Report? All right.
I think that's
Norway?
Yeah.
We have it. Yep.
Just because I read an article the other day about it. I'm sure Texans are really happy as well, but yeah,
we're happy in our own way, right?
We have a specific way of being happy.
Yeah, we have our own specific way, but I mean, everybody finds their happiness in different ways. I mean, Norway, is it the place to go if I want to find the ultimate level? I mean, is it happy? Everybody's happy. You're a happy person, so I kind of buy into it.
I mean, as you say, it depends what makes you happy. If you want a lot of space and beautiful nature. And a lot of fish and friendly food, friendly people. then yeah, I guess so. But it might not suit everyone if they don't like expensive alcohol and too much silence. You know, that could scare them.
I know I have friends who love expensive alcohol and too much silence, so it could be right.
I know a few people.
Yeah, I know some people I could tell you about. All right, in 1993, a siege ended with a raid, which resulted in the tragic death of 83 cult followers and their leader. It was men, women, and children. Was this Norwegian or Texas?
Ooh, I don't know. This sounds like something that happened in Sweden, but I don't know if it happened in Norway, so I'll go with Texas.
You got it. You knew what I was talking about, didn't you? Yeah, Johnny knows the Waco
Waco incident.
Yeah, compound in 1993 that was sieged. We've talked about that on the show before, too. All right, which place had the battle? This is, and I know no battle is a good battle, but this had the coolest name for a battle. Which place had the Battle of Sound?
The Battle of...
The Battle of Sound.
Of Sound?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I have no idea. Well, let's go with Norway again then.
Got it. We're at 100%.
Oh, wow.
Wow. We have to come up with a prize. I didn't even come up with a prize for this. I'm sorry. It's just bragging rights if you get 100%. Okay. All right. Here's one. Oh, and you know the Battle of Sound? I think I was trying to figure out. I wouldn't have even known about the Battle of Sound if I had not had Wikipedia. So I looked that up. And I imagine the Battle of Sound is probably like two guys in trench coats holding up a boombox, like John Cusack, and
say anything.
And yeah. Who can turn up the boombox the loudest to woo the girl. Okay, another one, interesting one from history. Which one, Norway or Texas, was governed by a man that infamously held a press conference aboard a plane while in the nude? Norwegian or Texan?
I'm guessing Texan on this one.
Yes! Man! Because that one might have tricked me a little bit if I had not known the answer. It was Lyndon Baines Johnson, and he had some kind of a rep of being sort of rogue sometimes. No pun intended, but pun certainly,
yes.
Pun certainly made. But he had kind of a reputation for being sort of
taking conference calls in the restroom, things like that.
Yeah, he took conference calls while on the toilet. Taking care of things, yeah.
So very busy man. He was just very busy all the time.
Very busy man, yeah. Okay, I got one more. I kind of just drummed this up because there's a huge history in pop music for both Texan and Norwegian.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that we both very aware of. So a band, very prominent 80s band, shoot a music video. It's very cartoonish, using an armadillo as their mascot all throughout the video. Is this Texan or Norwegian?
Ooh, that's a tricky one. Because when you first said that, I was thinking of Aha and Take On Me, because it's very cartoonish. But then it's like, armadillo? Is there an armadillo? And I was like, no, I can't remember. So then maybe I should just go for Texas.
Yes! Because it might be.
Yep.
Yes! You got it. It's The Clash, Rock the Casbah, from the early 80s. I actually had a friend who was a consultant for the director on that film, has been on the show before. But yes, Rock the Casbah, you can look it up on YouTube. It's got an armadillo. It was filmed in Austin. I think they shot it in a day, a span of a day. They did the whole shoot. But I tricked you. I was trying to trick you by putting the word cartoonish in there, because one of the most famous videos ever made is Aha, Take On Me. And it's iconic, and that song is everywhere still to this day. It's in movies and television, and it's one of the most amazing songs. It was just a beautiful pop song. Okay, I was going to ask you about this, too. You're from Norway, sparsely populated. So, you know, I was just in New Orleans, which is also a sparsely populated city in the U.S. There's a lot of tourists there, but I've never been to New Orleans. I'm there for a few days. I see one person I know who moved there. Just randomly, I run into him. And then I see Joel McHale, who's an actor here in the States. He's been on TV and movies. He's there filming. I run into him, so it's just random. So I'm thinking, in Norway, did you ever run into the guys from Aha or the what does the fox say guys? Ylvis? Did you ever?
Oh yeah, Ylvis. Yeah, I used to study in the city there from the Ylvis brothers. No, I haven't bumped into any of those. Although my mom and dad, when they went walking in the forest, they bumped into the prime minister once.
Well, there you go. So wow. Somebody ran into Hillary Clinton in the forest. That happened here after the election in New York. She was out in the woods. Saturday Night Live turned it into a whole bit. They did a little comedy on it. To just show you, it's not that random. They ran into the prime minister out in the woods. It's not that random.
Yeah.
He was out for a jog. The former prime minister. He was out for a jog. And then
did they literally run into him? Like he ran into him while he was jogging? Or like, oh, he's out.
No. No, I think they just passed him, and then they started talking because it was like, oh, the Prime Minister, and he's very friendly, and my parents are quite friendly, so.
So before you take off, you have a lead role. I was doing some research on you, and we actually do some research around here, despite what people say. But doing some research, I found a really interesting trailer for a film you worked on, a feature length.
Yeah.
This is not happening. Is there a place that we could find that? Because I would really like to watch this.
It's not online at the moment.
Yeah.
But it had like a premiere at selected cinemas in London and other places in the UK. So, and I think it entered some festivals in the States as well. So yeah, it's a nice little film. It was the first film I ever did. That was the film that sort of got me
really
wrote.
So that was the one.
Yeah, we did like a short film just for fun first, but that was the film he asked me about, and that was the thing that sort of put me on a different path.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you're talking about you're hoping to come back to the States, you're going to do some Comic-Con stuff, possibly. It sounds like that's on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully with Comic-Cons, I might drop by the States, and it would also be great to sort of start working more in the States. I have some contacts, and I might do a short film soon in California, trying to get over there as soon as I can.
Is there anything that you finished or that you already know is kind of coming up that you're excited about that you might want to kind of give us a little insight on?
Yeah. There's a film that I did last summer where I play the female lead, and it's coming out hopefully May, June time this year. It's just an independent feature. But it's a really interesting story. It's sort of a thriller, drama, romance, a bit like Gone Girl, I guess.
Oh, awesome!
Yeah.
In terms of the atmosphere, or like the topic, yeah. So I'm really excited to see that finished. It's called A Hippopotamus.
Oh, interesting name. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I'm going to play the female lead in a Brazilian feature film later this year, or early next year, to be shot in the Netherlands, which I'm really excited about. Yeah. So, like, half of the film is set in Brazil, and half of the film is set in the Netherlands, and it's sort of about the pursuit of happiness in different cultures and hyper-modernity, and, about these two very different people who crossed over at one point. Yeah, so that I'm really looking forward to be part of that.
It's one of the things, too, kind of Brazil and Norway have in common is they both have that very kind of free spirit, kind of that sort of a happy culture. I was thinking about when we were doing research, just what would be some really good roles for Ingvild, like some stuff that I'd like to see. You guys. And I was thinking, okay, they're England. I think they're still shooting Black Mirror. And I was like, I'd love to see you do an episode of Black Mirror. I'm just going to put that. I'm putting that out there right now to the universe.
That would be amazing. I like Black Mirror. Yeah, some of the episodes especially are really, really makes you think.
Really intense. And some of them, like I watched the one about the people that were leaping in time in that kind of virtual reality. Mm. And
the San Junipero one.
Yes. And I was like, that could have been a feature film. That was the content there. The writing was a feature film. Good enough for a feature film. On its own, a standalone. So I'd like to see that. I'd also like to see you do some comedy. At some point.
Oh, yeah. I've done two comedies, one in Germany and one in the UK, which are still in post-production. But I love doing comedy, and I'm part of a comedy improv troupe. So, I would definitely love to do a comedy series. That would be so much fun.
Yeah, and of course, you're in the UK now, which is very well known for its history and comedy. So I think you're in a good place for that to fall on your lap to happen.
What about something like a Game of Thrones or something like that?
Oh,
yeah.
Yes, it would be amazing. I would love to be in Game of Thrones.
Okay, casting people, if you're listening, we got these ideas. We're putting them out. You know, we've actually brainstormed ideas on the show, and it's amazing how things in the universe sort of people come up with the same ideas at the same time.
Yeah.
I've pitched like just pilot ideas that were sort of like kind of a half joke, half serious, and then I would like a week later I'd be reading in the newspaper that it's actually going to production.
Yeah. So you sort of tapped into the zeitgeist.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it happens sometimes. Hey, we want to thank Ingvild Dahlia, and am I saying that still right?
Yeah, you're doing quite good, I think.
keep practicing it more. And before the show, it's Ingvild Dahlia. We want to thank you. It's such a great pleasure to have you on our show in the Thunderpop Dome. And we see some big things coming up for you in the future. And, of course, already big things in the recent past. Playing the young Princess Leia is a pretty big...
Yeah.
Hey, we want to thank Ingvild, Delia. It's such a pleasure. I know we went a little over time, too, so I thank you for
giving us some time. Thank you for having me. It was great talking to you guys.
Oh, it was great talking to you as well. Hey, thank you, Ingvild.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
That's cool, man. Cool, man.
That was.
Ingvild, Delia.
Across the pond.
Across the pond. You know, busy girl, and she was able to take some time and talk to our little show.
Most definitely. Very personable and good sport about everything. And
yeah.
Obviously why people there are very happy. They're happy people.
I wanted to research her place where she was from, mm-hmm. Norway. And so I started doing research. And every time I look places like Norway, I look at the pictures, you just want to pack up and move there. It's
right.
It's like this beautiful country. And you see people. And they wear these. I was looking at some pictures where people were like in these great costumes.
Mm-hmm.
Like standing on a mountain. And you immediately just want to be transported to that place, you know. Not unlike Star Wars with Luke Skywalker, kind of in a
And then all of a sudden, like you have all this space, mm-hmm. and it's something we don't get much of anymore.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you might do that for a while, then you're like, I'm ready to get around people again,
right?
But yeah, I would just run through the woods a lot, and eventually I would run into someone.
Exactly. Eventually you're going to run into somebody.
I would run into somebody, you know, pretty cool from Norway. The Aha guy or Yelvis. Or I knew it. I was like, I'm going to ask her about Yelvis.
Yeah.
What does the fox say, guys? If we ever get her back, I want to hear some inside baseball about does the fox say, guys. What does the fox say? Oh, man. I'm DJ, so when that song comes out, and I'm having to play that for like 6 months at weddings.
Oh, yeah.
And kids running around my table doing the sound effects and stuff. Yeah. All right, we'll be right back. We're pretty excited. We had a lot of fun talking to Ingvild. We'll be right back on this 36th episode of the Thunderpop Podcast.
Star Wars is so galactic and Solo charismatic. Makes me kind of asthmatic. If Anakin had studied his mathematics, maybe he wouldn't have spasmatic. The Force, of course, is wide awake, baby. And Princess Leia is the universe's hottest girl.
And we are back from the Thunderpop Dome. So there he was, Ingvild, Delia. I'm actually already went back and watched the Yelvis, What Does the Fox Say?
We
were on break. It's been a while since I've seen that. What does the fox say?
Yep, they are happy people.
Yeah. She could have been an extra in that, maybe.
Possibly.
I don't think she worked on it, though. She didn't. No. She went to the school, I think, but I don't think she actually knew them.
Right.
That was the impression I got from talking to her. There was, Ingvild, Delia. It was very gracious to come on. We were very excited to have her on the podcast. So now we've got some unfinished business here on the Thunderpop Podcast. We're going to do some spring cleaning. Yeah, kind of look around here and see what needs to be picked up. You know, it's April now. And in April, we do spring cleaning around here on the podcast. What that will consist of is some unfinished business. Some things that I haven't covered or talked about that I had kind of left off a while back. Got a couple of emails about this, and so I promised I was going to pick up and answer this question. I mentioned that I had auditioned, or I was a finalist, to be on the Worst Bakers in America quite a while back. And the reason why I didn't ever talk about it again is obviously because I didn't get on the Worst Bakers in America. In fact, I got something to say to the Food Network.
Uh-oh.
You guys, you dropped me like a dirty rag.
Oof.
As soon as you decided that I wasn't on your show, you dropped me like a dirty rag. I was a finalist to be on the Worst Bakers in America, baked my heart out to try to get on your show, or I burned baked goods like a madman to try to get on that damn show, and then you dropped me like a dirty rag. And there seems to be this sort of trend, because I had not talked about this because I was told to keep this a secret and not talk about it in social media. So I assumed it also stood for podcasting as well.
Right.
So I didn't talk about it. But I was went even further along in the process. I was like, it was up to the executives at the network.
Mm.
Like at this point, I had already made it past casting. Really nice people too. Casting people, total sweethearts through the whole process. It was a game show version of the Shazam app.
Mm.
And me and my friend Erica, we tried out. I tried out with different people. We had like a couple of my friends over here, and it's basically, you know, it's like Name That Tune. It's a reboot of that sort of type of game show. And I'm gonna go ahead and give you the goods, because they didn't put me on there. So I'll tell you, it's good. It's supposed to be on Fox.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're gonna film it in May, and it's on Fox with Jamie Foxx hosting.
Mm.
So I went. We spent about 48 hours.
of just working around the clock in preparing, doing the music, like getting ready, like we were quizzing each other on our YouTube, going mm-hmm. back and forth with songs. And we did great on both auditions. They said, you have now got as far as you can get from our standpoint. It's now at the network's executive's desk to make the final decision. And at that point, we were really excited. I mean, it was like a, because there was, this show is supposed to be like, there's supposed to be like $1 million on the line.
Right.
This was going to be like, they said, that, and even the casting guy said, this is life changing kind of money. If you get on and you win, it was about 3 days, I was really giddy and excited. I couldn't even sleep. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about what I was going to do with $1 million. We were going to get a new studio.
Man, beef it up.
Quit my day job.
Yeah.
And just go full time with this operation.
Right.
And I don't know if my wife would have been on board with that proposal. But anyway, yeah. So then a week passes. Then another week passes. And we had finally had agreed that if they were shooting it in May, that March was kind of the month. If we didn't hear anything by March, we felt like they wasn't going to be that close to the time that they were going to tell us we made it on. Because it was right. very important to make sure they had their contestants to be already kind of locked down for those dates.
Right.
But I was already kind of having a plan to scramble my schedule. Was there going to be some things I was going to have to take off my calendar in May
right.
to be able to make the trip up there? Because you have to block out about a week. So anyway, we didn't know what week it was going to be. So we just knew May. Mm-hmm. This whole month. Be ready. So finally, week passes, another week passes, and then all March is over. Nothing. Again, drop me like a dirty rag.
Ugh.
Just drop me on the floor and stomp on me, Fox Television. I named my tune Heart Out. And I'll tell you what, both of those shows, fuck them. I'm not going to watch them anymore. I'm not going to watch any more Food Network. I'm already moved to HDTV. I'm watching Property Brothers and all that bullshit.
Yeah.
I'm going to switch back to MTV and start watching Catfish again.
Oh, yeah, some Catfish. There's some reality TV for you.
Maybe that's the show I'll try to get on. I failed at Food Network. Didn't make it on the game show. I might try to get on Catfish.
Yeah, just, I mean, get out there on some social media and some dating apps and then see if you can try to get catfished.
I'm going to try to be the catfisher.
Oh, be the catfisher.
So they're going to come to my house and show up. And they'll be like, you got me on the show, I'm on. What do I win? What do I win since you found me?
And they're going to say, Steven, why have you been pretending to be a 25-year-old blonde in Austin, Texas?
I'll say, hey, don't judge me. It's 2017. I can be what I want to be. If I want to be a 25-year-old blonde in Austin, Texas, female.
I can be that, and I can go in the women's restroom.
Exactly. Damn it. So, fuck them, Food Network. Fox. I would have been awesome on your shows. So anyway, that's my spring cleaning. I had to get that off my chest. They told me it was hush-hush about the game show. Now, mm-hmm. you knew about it because you were here that day when they were, the stuff was starting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had told you about it, but it was like Ingvild with Star Wars and the Avengers, where she couldn't tell anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no social media, no posts. Like, can you imagine the trouble she would have gotten in after she got cast for that in
Rogue
One?
She would have came out and said, I'm going to be Princess Leia.
On her Facebook?
Yeah.
Can you imagine the trouble do you think they would have reshot it with a different actress?
Maybe.
But they've gone to that much trouble?
She probably had to sign some sort of NDA.
I want to call her back just to ask her that.
She would have just gotten the part pulled and then not paid. From my understanding, especially with roles like that, you don't get paid until you roll. You have these things come out where they'll say, yeah, you know, for instance, Johnny Depp's going to be the new Invisible Man. But there's things in the contract with Universal where until he actually steps foot into the role that they can see here, like the Batman might be canceled or the Flash movie got canceled. Those actors don't get paid for that.
Like, you mean, like, if it's not filmed yet?
Right. You think of that as an actor, you're basically telling other jobs no, because I've got to be doing this film for this 3-month
blocking out
block,
that time.
And so I'm sorry, I've got to turn down this other work.
Mm-hmm.
And then the studio just comes to you and says, you know what, we're dropping that.
So there was. That was two shows, but I'm catfishing now. I'm already setting up my fake Instagram profile.
Like, scoured the internet for some photos.
Stealing some people's photos to be the fake Janice, the character I'm making up for this. Oh, boy. All right, when we get back, you know it. You waited for it, or you didn't give a shit. But it's agree or disagree.
The shit is getting real. Oh, yes, things getting serious. Dude, did you hear what I said? The shit just got real.
And we are back. 36th episode of the Thunderpop Podcast. It's agree or disagree for Johnny Lightfoot. Number one, Disney Star Wars. We've been on topic today, some of that at least. Disney Star Wars recently announced their new animated short series. This is going to be called Force of Destiny. This sounds exciting. However, is it a fact that most fans would prefer, over this project, Star Wars returning back to the Family Guy parodies and the Robot Chicken parodies that they were doing in cartoons a while back? Would that be really what the fans would prefer at this point?
I'm probably going to disagree simply because I think the folks that really, really like the Family Guy parody stuff, I think they're just casual Star Wars fans. More than hardcore Star Wars fans,
But you're a hardcore Star Wars fan,
and I love those. Yeah. Especially the Robot Chicken stuff. I mean, Mark Hamill did the voice of all the Luke Skywalker in all those episodes,
and George Lucas was involved in that.
So I mean, they're really cool and different. But I want to say most Star Wars fans prefer stuff that can be ingrained in the mythos. As opposed to those shows.
I like that George Lucas got involved in that. Mm-hmm. It just shows that he's got a sense of humor.
Right, because he knows he gets made fun of a lot.
Yeah.
So for him to even make fun of himself a little bit is nice.
Yeah, but he's a better sport about it when he's made fun of than the president.
Yeah, much better.
Well, they did the Saturday Night Live bit with George Lucas and the...
Oh, Somebody That I Used to Know?
The Somebody I Used to Know? Yeah, I'm sure he saw that.
Right.
But he wasn't tweeting about it.
No, he wasn't tweeting angry rants about it.
Yeah, you... Alright. Number two. Thor Ragnarok is the perfect blueprint on how they could potentially execute a He-Man Master of the Universe live-action reboot. Do you agree or disagree with that statement?
Agree. 100% agree.
Yeah, that was...
That trailer for me, like, it felt very, like, 80s Masters of the Universe with the Thor mixed in there, and then, like, mixed with the Led Zeppelin, and then the bright colors flashing on the screen for the lettering and everything. And then just, like, kind of combination of like a medieval Viking thing mixed with technology. It was very Masters of the Universe.
Yeah, it seemed like it was. And I had even thought before that had come out, I thought, you know, kind of the stuff they do with Thor a little bit could be the He-Man. And that could be the way they could go, like going forward with you know, they want to reboot He-Man.
And the Masters of the Universe.
They've been trying for a long time.
There's been a lot of like back and forth with that. It's going to happen eventually. Where there's smoke, there's fire. So it's going to eventually happen. But do you think now, though, it's kind of almost going to be like, whatever they do, people are going to be like, oh, well, Thor and Guardians of the Galaxy already did it.
Yeah.
Like, they almost were too late. They dragged their feet too long on it.
Unfortunately, I think that would probably happen simply because they took too long. Because technically, this stuff was in He-Man like 20 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
People like me who were kids of the 80s and 90s, like, He-Man was it for me in the 80s.
Yeah.
So, like, this stuff I'm seeing in Guardians and Thor, that's the same stuff we were seeing on, like, kids' TV shows.
Yeah. See, a lot of people don't realize that. See, Star Wars was the biggest thing on the planet in the late 70s to early 80s. But then when He-Man came out, it was He-Man.
Oh, yeah. And then, to a lesser extent, Thundercats. But it was kind of... It was them taking, like, young boys' love of, like, knights and Vikings and whatnot, and then taking a little bit of Star Wars and mixing the two. And it was the very first thing where a cartoon was actually started because of action figures.
Yeah.
So kids loved that, hey, I have these guys with swords and shields, but they can also fly around in spaceships, mm-hmm. and there's these alien creatures. So it was neat, and then it got so popular that it spawned the actual cartoon, mm-hmm. and then later the Dolph Lundgren movie.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the G.I. Joe, rebooting G.I. Joe in toys mm-hmm. was also really big around that time as well. Right. So they were kind of those two things. All right, The Sun, very respectable publication, they recently reported that a fan has spent the last 3 years transforming himself into the time-traveling warrior character Trunks from Dragon Ball Z. Now, this guy reports that he spends $5,000 a year just to maintain the look.
Okay? Wow.
So, is it likely that he will be able to make that up, that $5,000 a year, as a cosplay performer?
You know, I've seen a guy that did something similar, but as a Christopher Reeves Superman. $5,000, gosh. And, you know, if he was somebody who was in anything, I would say, yeah, because you're going to get paid. Because I've seen people like the original Green Power Ranger.
Yeah.
He literally is pretty wealthy, mm-hmm. and most of his earnings are from doing little appearances at comic book conventions, mm-hmm. Just based off him being in the original Power Rangers.
Yeah, which is a pretty big deal.
Right, so he makes a lot of money. I don't know, and especially since that's a lesser character
yeah.
in the show.
Yeah.
I would say he'd be lucky if he breaks even.
Some of the women now, there's some women.
Oh, some of those women cosplayers, they make good money.
Yeah, they become really viral on social media, Instagram and whatnot. Yeah,
but the thing with them is they do like multiple different characters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're able to get more fans. Whereas this person's just relying on Dragon Ball Z fans. He's
putting all his eggs in one basket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You got the... Do you know Hip Hop Trooper?
Like the Stormtrooper?
Yeah, he wears the red. Mm-hmm. And he does the kind of the hip hop crossover mm-hmm. with the Stormtrooper. He's big on social media. And I know he does his own merch. And I don't know if he's supposed to, but he does.
Yeah. And then, I mean, but you have those cosplaying females where, like, they'll go to a convention Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and like Friday they'll be Catwoman, and then mm-hmm. Saturday they'll be some anime character, and then Sunday they'll be something else or something original, some kind of video game character. So, and then they'll even be involved in like Q&A panels about mm-hmm. how they make their costumes and things like that. So they can make some pretty good money.
Wow. So what do they do? Because they have booths at the conventions. They do photos, they do mm-hmm. autograph, like the others.
Photos and autographs mm-hmm. and everything. So even though these aren't actors or mm-hmm. technically models, they basically become Instagram models. Mm-hmm. And then they get their fans and then, you know, charge them $15 a signature and $25 if you want a photo too.
That's a great gig.
Yeah.
Maybe I do want to be a 24-year-old blonde female from Austin, Texas.
I want you to start living as a gay woman.
That's the gig there. All right. It always has to go that way, doesn't it, on this
yeah,
show?
It always has.
To, yeah, it always happens. All right, when we come back, thoughts and advice for that ass.
For that ass.
From Mr. Johnny Lightfoot.
And the masters of the universe.
I am Adam, Prince of Eternia and defender of the secrets.
Fuck off.
This is Cringer, my fearless friend.
Fuck off.
We are back. And to close the show, Mr. Johnny Lightfoot has some thoughts and advice.
All right, so I recently just got back from spending a great deal of time in Minnesota, or Minnesota, as the people up there call it. I was there for about 3 weeks, and it was cold as balls the entire time I was there. And something I found out in traveling to Minnesota, and I'm going to harken back to Miss Ingvild a little bit on this, mm-hmm. is so up in Minnesota, myself and one of the other guys that was with me, we were both on some various dating apps mm-hmm. to see what the field is like up there in Minnesota, and the field is not like we have here in Austin, Texas.
Mm.
And we decided it was because of the lack of sun and the cold that most attractive females probably move down south to places like Austin, Texas. So based on that,
was it really pretty barren?
It's very barren.
Oh wow.
Put it this way, if you're on any of those swiping apps, so like Tinder or Bumble, you would probably swipe left about 20 times per each swipe right.
Interesting.
And then we noticed this while out and about in public as well. And they all have to wear big jackets.
Yeah.
So it's t-shirt and shorts all year.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't surprise me when in her interview, Miss Delia said how it was sunny and nice there in London. And so, obviously, an attractive female like herself moved, got somewhere sunny and nice. The thoughts and advice is, Minnesota, you need to do something with this global warming thing. We need to speed it up, get some warmth up there.
Oh,
because I feel like they're getting shortchanged in Minnesota.
Wow.
Maybe that's just because we live here in Austin, and there's pretty much 20 swipe rights for every one swipe left.
Mm.
So, Tinder, Bumble, you may want to work on getting some more attractive females up north. That way, you have more users.
You know, they built that Mall of America. You were there, right? You went to the Legoland.
Yeah, I did. I did go to the Mall of America.
Maybe they need to just add on to the Mall of America and build it like basically like an indoor city in Minnesota where the whole city is covered in a dome.
Well, what's funny too is so they had two water parks there. They're both indoor water parks.
In the mall or just in general?
Indoors, like within close proximity to the mall, they have indoor water parks.
Can you go there year round?
So there were people there, like big parking lot full of cars.
Did you go?
No, we didn't go. Busy. We didn't bring a swimsuit for obvious reasons.
Yeah, it's not something you have at top of your to-do list when you're going to Minneapolis.
It was like jacket, hat, scarf, gloves. But no, they have these indoor water parks, and it's just a regular thing. Like when they think of water park, that's their idea of water park, whereas my idea is like Schlierbahn.
That's kind of like the old we used to stay as a kid. They used to have these things called Holiday Inn Holodomes. And it was not a whole water park, but it was a swimming pool and then like a little game room.
Slide or something.
And it was all covered in like this dome, kind of like window dome.
People could use the pool all year.
Year round. And we stopped. We used to love, to us, that was like the vacation, is if we go stay at night somewhere at a Holiday Inn Holodome. For me and my brother, we just thought that was the neatest thing in the world. So a couple of years ago, me and my wife were I had a gig. I was DJing down in Corpus Christi.
Mm-hmm.
And we were trying to figure out, we hadn't been to Corpus in a while, so I'd asked my friend from Corpus, Jimmy Maddox, who actually does all the voiceover stuff on the show. I was like, Jimmy, where should we stay? And he said, oh, there's this one place right on the beach. So he gave us the name, and I booked it, went up there, and it was literally like that kind of the same similar concept of the Holiday Inn Holodome, but it was like from like the 70s, 80s. It had never been updated. And this was, so at this point, you go there, you think it was going to be kind of neat, but then it's like, oh, this is kind of like the Holodome, but it sort of was sad, actually, because it was like this place that had not been updated in decades.
Wow.
And it was, so it really, that now it just wasn't, it didn't have the same vibe.
That's too bad.
When we were kids, it was kind of a little bit sad and creepy. And then there were like weird people there following us around, trying to talk to us. I think they were trying to rob us.
It's quite possible. You ended up in a Jimmy might not have been there in a couple of years.
Yeah, he might not have, because he lives there. So I think the worst thing you can do is ask someone that lives in the city, because we don't stay in Austin hotels very much.
Right.
Yeah,
if you asked me, I wouldn't know where to go.
Ask us about restaurants.
Yeah, all day.
All day. Places to shop for like clothing or, you know, appliances or whatever. Food, we can tell you all day. But hotels are like, don't ask a local about hotels. That's the lesson to be learned there.
It's, yeah, and again, to my point, Minnesota, why you need to step your game up for the sake of men everywhere traveling to Minnesota. Also, your locals are not good at recommending restaurants.
Really?
At all. No. Like, oh. I guarantee if any of you from Minnesota came to Austin, you tell me how long you're going to stay, I could give you a list.
A long list.
And you wouldn't have a bad meal.
Even if you name one genre food, you could probably still give them a
exactly.
list.
Exactly. Yeah. But every advice we got from locals on restaurants, and we had a nice amount we could expense per meal, was no good at all. Mm. But then literally I could get on Yelp and just read the reviews.
Yeah.
And I could find – and everywhere we went that I found on Yelp was amazing. So
the internet was doing a better job of setting you out.
And I think it's because a lot of the people that were getting on there and reviewing on Yelp were probably not from around there. I don't know if that's the case.
Interesting.
But, yeah, don't trust a Minnesotan about where to eat either.
You were in Minnesota. You could have gone over – well, you were next to Wisconsin. You were one state away from Wisconsin.
Yeah, state away.
So I was going to say you could have gone and visited Stephen Avery at the jail.
What's funny was actually a couple of the guys one Saturday went to Prince's house.
Yeah.
And it was like $45.
Paisley Park.
Yeah. Because they asked me and a couple of the other people if we wanted to go. And we were like, yeah, sure. And they were like, it's $45 for the tour. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how long is this tour? Is this like an all-day event? And he was like, no, it's like an hour. And I was like, no, I'll find something. I'll go watch a movie.
That's interesting. Go see Purple Rain. Yeah. Like dial it up on Netflix or iTunes. I'm curious though, like if that was going on when Prince was still alive, or if that's that $40 tour is something that started since
right. Because you would think somebody like Prince probably wouldn't be charging just his fans $45 for an hour long tour.
Yeah, and I don't even know if the tour thing was even going on at that point.
True.
I know they had a venue, and they had things going on at the venue, but I don't know if there was actually a tour. And now his estate is handling the
business. For Prince, it was never about, like, the money.
No, he turned down stuff all the time, like the Guitar Hero.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to do it. Said that he, you know, of course, our resident Prince fan, Jazz One, really followed Prince real closely, but you know, I know he turned down a Guitar Hero, and there was only like two bands that ever turned down a Guitar Hero that were at. I mean, I know one of them was Guns N' Roses, and that was specifically because of Axl's fallout with Slash.
Right,
he did not want to do that because of that reason. But then with the Prince deal, he turned down millions and billions and zillions of dollars Guitar Hero for a Prince version because he said, "Oh, I want kids to learn playing on real guitar." Not playing a game where it's a fake guitar. He just didn't seem that. Of course, he turned down streaming platforms to stream his music and many other things.
Because we use Tidal a lot. Mm-hmm. True track, not an MP3, so it's not compressed. There are artists that you can't get on there because you just don't have the rights to the music.
Yeah.
So you actually have to go grab a vinyl or a CD. If you want the best quality of prints, you have to go buy a vinyl or buy the actual CD.
You're stupid.
I forgive you.
Oh my God, thank God.
Besides, anything beautiful is worth getting hurt for.
Well, it's very well put.
You know who said that?
No.
Me.
I wish I were more like you, Prince.
He's a remarkable artist, but he was a one-of-a-kind. Also, just speaking of Prince, we lost Charlie Murphy. Rest in peace to Charlie Murphy. Great comedian. Really down-to-earth, genuine guy. Everybody, have a great day. Hour, month,
year,
second, minute second, I don't know. Have a great calendar. I want to thank Johnny Lightfoot, Ingville Delia.
Great interview.
And I want to thank you out there.
And you.
Peace. And Thunderpop is a Hit the Bricks production.